The National Federation of the Blind is honored to have the Law Symposium here, and we are pleased to offer the facilities and some of the ideas, and glad to welcome everybody who would like to participate. I heard some planning to expand the coverage of the law today, which always cheers me right up. So the Law Symposium is doing its work. The National Federation of the Blind took its first case in 1954. Dr. Tenbrook authorized that. I don't believe that he served as counsel on the case. I became president of the Federation in 1986. I had taken cases on behalf of disabled people before I became president, and I authorized bringing hundreds of cases during the time I served in the presidency. We know that we must adopt laws that protect the rights of disabled people. We know that without enforcing them, they matter less than they might. Consequently, we do our best to bring the cases that are going to make systemic change for us. And during the course of our history, starting back in 1954, our president has always been responsible for managing our litigation. And that is so because litigation is a program element for us. We can't get the protection of the law without enforcing the law. Today we hear from the president of the National Federation of the Blind. He is responsible for our litigation strategy. He does get a lot of advice. I am Director of Legal Policy for the National Federation of the Blind, and when I have advice, somehow or another, I offer it. But we use a good many lawyers around the country. Scott Labar is in the audience. He offers advice. We use Brown, Goldstein, and Levy. Several of you are in the audience, and you all give advice. It used to be that Dan Goldstein would call me up and tell me what to do. When I pointed this out to him, he said, "No, you called me up and told me what to do." So I guess we had a mutual method of approach. The president of the National Federation of the Blind is a blind person. Our first president was Dr. Tenbrook. He served for 23 years in the presidency. And he made a significant difference in disability rights, partly by his writing, partly by his speaking, partly by the cases he authorized or pursued, some he pursued personally, and partly because of the heart that he had. Our current president has now served for almost 4 years. He came to us as an education expert, having run the education program dealing with blindness in the state of Wisconsin. He was raised in Wisconsin, so he has a Midwest background. He likes to tell stories about his coming. Some of them indicate the nature of how we conduct our business. I'll offer two. He walked into my office after he'd come here to work, the day that he had shown up to work, and he asked me, he said, "I'm here to report, what do I do?" Now, I don't remember this. He tells me that I said to him, "Were you at the convention last summer?" And he said, "Yes." And he tells me that I said to him, "Did you hear that we're going to have an education program for blind children next summer?" And he said, yes. And I said, that's what you're going to do. And he said, good, what's the plan? And I said, according to him, that's what I got you for. And then he goes on to say there wasn't a plan, but of course there was a plan. The plan was to get the brightest guy I could find to do the education program for blind kids, and we've been doing it ever since. We're going to have educational programs in 40 states this summer based upon the work that our president has done. We have 50 different programs of education, and we're doing the most aggressive science and engineering programs in the nation having to do with blind children, mostly imagined and put together by our president. We get the students here and we get them to build boats, and we give them the equipment to build boats, and they have a week to build the boat, and when they get done, or 5 days, and when they get done with it after the fourth day, then we take the boats and we put them in the water, and then we get them to climb in the boats to find out if they're going to sink. We haven't lost anybody yet, so I'm pleased to say that he's imagined great programs. I was sitting in my office, and I know that we caused at the 200th anniversary of the birth of Louis Braille, he was born in 2009, we caused a coin to be created with Louis Braille's face on it and real live readable Braille, the only one that's ever been struck in the United States. And I was sitting there thinking we should expand the ways that we're known and the ways that blind people come to be a part of our society. And I said, you know, we ought to get this on the space shuttle. And about 2 weeks later, he said, well, I've arranged to have it on the space shuttle. It was just a thought that I was throwing out as a, and he thought it, he says it was an assignment, so he went and did it. And I sat there in the stands in Florida, and I observed the space shuttle fly into space, and it shook the stands, and I took the recording of that incident, and I brought it to our national convention, and I played it at our national convention talking about our education programs, and it shook the room. And everybody thought, well, that is quite an exhibition of power of the kind that you can't get in most places, and the National Federation of the Blind has been part of it, and we had astronauts there to talk to us about how we're going to expand opportunities for the blind who may one of these times be going into space. This is the character of our president. He believes in the litigation strategy that we have. He asks for advice, and I can tell you for sure he gets it, and so he is pursuing the enforcement of law in the United States. As I say, we have about 50 cases going at the moment. I am delighted that we have a person of that kind of character to lead us and to direct our litigation strategy. Here is Mark Riccobono.
Thank you very much, Dr. Maurer, for that introduction, and good afternoon. We'll try that again. Good afternoon. Yeah. Okay, I know. I know you were taking a bite, right? That's the classic problem. It is a pleasure to be here this afternoon, and I think that I'm not for certain, but registration-wise, this may be one of our or the best law symposium we've had, and certainly the enthusiasm in the audience is as high as ever. I was a little worried this morning when the bus hadn't shown up yet. We only had two tables full at breakfast, but the lunch is completely full, so I'm glad you all are here. Individually, we are scattered, ineffective, and inarticulate, subject alike to the oppression of the social worker and the arrogance of the governmental administrator. Collectively, we are the masters of our own future and the successful guardians of our own common interests. These words, delivered by Jacobus ten Broek at the founding of the National Federation of the Blind in the fall of 1940, represent the fundamental elements that are at the foundation of his legacy today. Those fundamentals are what I hope to emphasize this afternoon. My presentation is an unusual one for this law symposium, but only because the primary content delivered during the past 10 gatherings has typically been from those trained in the law. I, unlike the majority of this room, have no law degree, have not been welcomed into the noble profession, and, by the way, I am not subject to the endless array of one-liners about lawyers. While others in this room may be better equipped to articulate Dr. Ten Broek's impact on the law 50 years after his passing, I offer something more fundamental regarding his life's work and its lasting contributions to our great nation and the world. This afternoon, I wish to emphasize, as Dr. Ten Broek's work did, that disability rights require more than the law itself. They also require what might be broadly described as disability rights movements. I use the word movements to make the point that we can view disability rights as having multiple intersecting movements, one being the organized blind movement. Sir Walter Scott said, "A lawyer without history or literature is a mere mechanic, a working mason. If he possesses some of these, he might venture to call himself an architect." I believe that if Dr. Ten Broek were here today, he would tell us that we do not need more disability rights lawyers, although the actual number of legal professionals with expertise in disability is not sufficient. But we do need more disability rights architects. While the law, especially the Constitution, was a central focus of Dr. Ten Broek's work, it is not his greatest legacy. Dr. Ten Broek understood that the most powerful mechanism for influencing the law and its implementation was to build a movement. His primary movement was the National Federation of the Blind, and had he been granted more time on this earth, I am confident other movements would have followed. Building a movement was so central to who Dr. Ten Broek was and how he thought about the law that upon his death, Kenneth Jernigan said, quote, "It would be equally accurate to say that the man was the embodiment of the movement, or that the movement was the embodiment of the man." In 1952, Dr. Ten Broek delivered an address to the convention of the National Federation of the Blind, a movement that was still in its early stage. He said, in part, "The essence of democracy consists in four indispensable guarantees to the individual citizen: the guarantees of liberty, equality, opportunity, and security. Full membership in a democratic society, that is to say, entitles the individual to liberty in thought and action, equality of treatment, opportunity to develop his potentialities, and security against the calamities of fortune over which he has no effective control. The withholding or withdrawal by society of any of these fundamental rights from an individual leaves him, at best, in a role of probationary membership, of second-class citizenship, and to that extent refutes the practice and violates the spirit of democracy. Dr. Tenbrook used the individualized construction of democracy to demonstrate the areas where people with disabilities were denied equal treatment and protection under the law. However, he recognized that the most powerful way to effect change was through coordinated action by individuals, through a movement. In 1957, he articulated the importance of association in the context of the right of the blind to organize, which was being threatened by agencies for the blind. Attempting to protect the custodial institutions they had established. He said, "The blind of America have bound themselves together primarily in order to unbind themselves from the arbitrary shackles which throughout all history have confined their movements and smothered their self-expression. Their emancipation from this social straitjacket requires the achievement of three essential and inseparable rights, three rights which constitute the fountainhead of American democracy and the recognized birthright of ordinary citizens. They are the right to organize, the right to speak, and the right to be heard." Dr. Tenbrook's words from more than six decades ago are as relevant today as they were at that time, and they easily apply to all people with disabilities. What then are the fundamentals of movements, and how can we, lawyers and mere mortals, contribute to those fundamentals? In order to enhance the right of the disabled to live in the world with all of the liberty, equality, opportunity, and security of our democracy, I offer this short list of fundamentals to be woven into the foundation of our legal work in an effort to stimulate conversation about how we continue to build disability rights movements. Number one, ownership. In any movement, it is essential that those at the heart of the movement are in control of its direction. We would not consider a woman's movement authentic if it was not driven by women. Nor should we expect disability rights to be largely driven by those without disabilities. This is not to discourage those without disabilities who are some of our most powerful disability rights champions. It is to recognize that in some places, disability rights priorities are not determined by people with disabilities, but by individuals who appear to take pride in speaking for people with disabilities. To support the ideal of ownership, we must be thoughtful about how we bring disability rights cases forward and how we coordinate legal work among organizations. The legal professionals that work within the structures of disability-run organizations understand this very well. Our annual Tenbrook Symposium and the work of the Disability Rights Bar Association are attempts to coordinate strategies, resources, and priorities with those who may not be working directly with disability-run organizations. Legal counsel should be careful to ensure that their words and actions are consistent with that value. As we grow the network of individuals interested in disability cases, it becomes increasingly difficult to coordinate. Disability rights attorneys are going to interpret aspects of the law differently, and there will be bad actors in the mix, as has been overemphasized in recent attempts to diminish the Americans with Disabilities Act. These challenges make it even more important for people with disabilities to drive the direction of legal efforts across the country. Two, community. In any movement, there has to be a sense of common purpose and a high value placed on bringing a community of individuals together. Dr. Tenbrook spent as much time on those activities as he did on studying and teaching about the Constitution. As disability rights lawyers, what more can we do to help people with disabilities to connect and build their own leadership circles? One thing we can and should be doing is helping people with disabilities be well informed about the law and how to protect their own rights. This means being proactive in providing training to people with disabilities and their families. Through those activities, we will provide a forum for people with disabilities to connect with each other, and we will find opportunities to assist individuals in building their leadership skills. We will also cultivate more people with disabilities who are interested in getting into the legal profession, especially if we use those opportunities to highlight lawyers with disabilities. There are still many places in this nation where people with disabilities are not well connected, and our best disability rights lawyers can be powerful facilitators for making those connections. Even 77 years after the creation of the National Federation of the Blind, there are still blind individuals who are isolated and not connected to the community we have built. This means we have more work to do to realize the full growth of our movement. I am certain there are plenty of other places throughout the country where that potential exists as well. Number three, power. We need more people with disabilities and disability rights experts in positions of power, inside and outside of the legal profession. You can be certain that in any place Dr. Tenbrook had the opportunity to be, he asserted his right to be there and got disability rights to be part of the conversation. Dr. Tenbrook also assisted other blind people to get into positions of authority so they could raise the profile of blind people and the organized blind movement. We need to strategize and cultivate opportunities to get more of our people into appointments on the federal courts, but also elected to local, state, and national office, and into the boardrooms of major corporations. We should influence progress using our legal expertise and our standing in the community. We need people in this room to be thinking 5 and 10 years down the road and how we can get the right people in line for opportunities that will arise. More importantly, we need the people in this room to stretch beyond their current circle to reach for opportunities that may seem out of reach today. There is not enough power in our disability rights movements, and we should not be shy about finding ways to get more of it. Number 4, awareness. Dr. Tenbrook recognized even in the early 1940s that creating public awareness about the capacity of people with disabilities was vitally important. How do we use the legal work we do to get more recognition of disability into the mainstream media? How can we use our expertise in the law to direct more documentary filmmakers, bloggers, and authors to cover disability from an authentic point of view? With any case we take on, we should be considering what the public awareness opportunities might be. Oftentimes, the National Federation of the Blind is asked to keep settlement agreements confidential. We do not agree to do so because of our obligations to our members. However, we also do not accept confidentiality because it benefits those working on accessibility to talk about it publicly, even if they did not come to the idea of being accessible on their own. Those things that get talked about are viewed as being most important. Hashtag JTB Law 18, by the way. We need disability, disability rights, and the advantages of systems that include the widest group of people to be talked about more. Public awareness is essential to movements, and it should be a primary focus in everything that we do. Number 5, tools for self-advocacy and self-expression. We do not have enough capacity to tackle all of the legal cases that need to be pursued related to disability. Thus, we need to continue to build better tools to empower people with disabilities to exercise efforts to protect their rights and express outrage about barriers they face outside of hiring a lawyer. How do we help people discover where complaints should be filed? Utilize templates for raising concerns regarding everyday barriers and share accessibility concerns through new media channels. If a local business refuses to meet its accessibility obligations, how can we effectively share that information and create pressure on the business? Google is enabling indicators of accessibility in its mapping applications. But what about indicating a lack of accessibility? Maybe we could establish an emoji that indicates inaccessibility. You may not realize that in the thousands of emoji that now exist, there are none that I am aware of that express an accessibility barrier or failure. Why not? If a bank website is not accessible, in addition to legal action, what if we create tools that allow all customers to express their disappointment and maybe even leave the bank? As disability rights lawyers, we should be seeking non-legal tools that improve self-advocacy and self-expression by people with disabilities. In the process, people with disabilities will generate data that will be useful in supporting legal cases. These are some fundamentals that I believe every disability rights lawyer should keep in mind to contribute to the greater effort of disability rights movements. My goal is not to diminish the vital importance of the legal expertise we have gathered together through our Jacobus Ten Broeck Disability Law Symposia over the past decade. In its own right, this is a disability rights movement. My aim is to raise the expectations of every disability rights lawyer to the understanding that the most important aspect of your work, as Dr. Ten Broeck modeled for you, is to be an integral part of a movement. This means finding ways to contribute to ownership, community, power, awareness, and tools within disability rights movements. 50 years after Ten Broeck, we should continue to build movements using modern tools, innovative approaches, and all of the advantages that we have gained during the past 50 years. The aim of every disability rights lawyer should not merely be to do well in protecting the liberty, equality, opportunity, and security of their individual clients. The aim should be to contribute to the broader movements, such that you might also be remembered as we in the National Federation of the Blind remember Jacobus Ten Broeck. In closing, I invite you to aim for the Ten Broeck standard. For you, will it be equally true to say that you were the embodiment of the movement, or that the movement was the embodiment of the disability rights lawyer? Thank you.